All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, April 20th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy 420, everybody. It is 48 degrees and nice and sunny here in upstate New York. So let's chuck that one up to another beautiful day in the spring. Everything is popping. Trees are opening. We have leaves budding. And my nose knows, I could tell you. Definite allergy season on the way. So, where do we leave off on yesterday? We titled the show DARPA Brain Initiative, Neurotech, and Behavior Monitoring. And yeah, that about puts it in a nutshell. It was a pretty insane show. We looked at Obama's new call for boosting funding for the Brain Initiative that he inked an executive order way back 2013, and now they want to increase funding by 45% as the Department of Energy is sticking their boots into the water to be a part of the Brain Project. We've of course looked at DARPA and a lot of their bullet points for their Brain Initiative, and I was quite surprised at some of the things that they were doing. We discovered that they are monitoring neurons, and their plan is to monitor neurons and read and write memories to the brain. There was a link I found. National Institute of Health is also involved in the Brain Initiative, as well as the National Science Foundation. And on the National Institute of Health's website, there's a whole section called Brain Initiative, and they kind of list out some of the projects that they are currently working on. And right off the bat, you can see those little neuronal recording devices are something that they're pushing very strongly. There's tons of research going on right now to be able to record and monitor. Record and reload. I don't know what you'd call that, but they said yesterday they wanted to record, read, and write. That's what it was. And then record synaptic transmissions. Let's just read a couple of these. This is off the National Institute of Health. So these are the funded awards of projects that are being worked on. And this, they don't have anything listed here for 2016 yet, but we have 2014 and 2015. So let's look at 2015. We have a funded award for carbon thread arrays for high resolution multimodal analysis of micro circuits. It will develop an array of 8-micron carbon fiber electrodes, which are stiff enough to insert into the brain, but sufficiently small to avoid damage, which plagues researchers using traditional recording electrode arrays. Yes, jam things into the brain, and oh, we do a little damage. In addition, we use in to use an electrical recording, the electrodes will be developed for voltammetric measurement of transmitters such as dopamine. Well, how interesting is that? They want to be able to use little mini wires to measure dopamine levels. Yeah, we talked about that. That is all based upon some of the DARPA research that they were doing for the Super Soldier program. And I don't know, every time I hear the Super Soldier program, I think of an X-Files episode, but it's not. I think that's why they call it that, because they want you to think doo-doo-doo-doo science fiction. But it's not. They're working on this. We talked all about that yesterday, too, with those Intel processors that actually have biosensors in them, so they can sense the wearers. This is, of course, being to be used in wearable clothing. So they could sense the wearers' mental state by different biometric measurements within the body, whether it be your breathing rate or your heart rate or your sweat rate or whatever. But that's all a part of this. They are looking at developing stuff like that for the battlefield. So when little Johnny is scared, they can make sure that they take care of it. And eventually it'll be push a button so Johnny doesn't feel anxiety or fear anymore. Johnny turns into an attack animal and goes after whatever they point him toward, just like he was in a video game. Together with these technological advances, it could allow multi-site, real-time, simultaneous electrical, physical, and transmitter measurements in behaving animals, providing a novel method to monitor neural circuits. Now, did you just hear what that said? Because when I read stuff like this, and this, of course, is for funding and research and what they're working on, but follow the dotted line to the future. So if you just heard what they were talking about, let's read this again. Together, these technological advances, being an engineer, this next little piece makes a difference, could allow multi-site, ding, ding, multi-site, like monitoring lots of things at lots of locations all at one time, like Big Brother sitting in a glass room watching all of the little ants that are connected to these carbon fiber electrodes to see what's going on in their brain. Together, these technological advances could allow multi-site, real-time, simultaneous, electrophysical, and transmitter measurements in behaving animals. So, bing, ding, bing. It's real-time, multi-site monitoring of what is going on in your brain. You know, don't think, and this is happening at the University of Michigan, by the way, Lady Pitbull, Joe Friday, if you're out there, University of Michigan, that's pretty frightening. All right, let's look at the next one. Biological living electrodes. So this is, I was reading about these yesterday. So they're making these electrodes too that are made out of living material. So not just fiber or carbon fiber or... I saw too that they were building some of those nanowires out of, maybe it was carbon or graphene. Graphene, that's where the newest nanowires were coming from, were graphene, and graphene is extremely strong. But there were these new ones that I just found yesterday that were made out of biological tissue. And this is one of the things that they're working on here. Biological living electrodes using tissue-engineered axonal tracks to probe and modulate the nervous system. We gotta love when they're probing your nervous system. Traditional non-organic microelectrodes can record and stimulate from many areas of the brain. But they produce inflammation, exhibit signal degradation, and lack specificity in neuronal cell type targeting. So Cullen, this is the scientist that got this funding in 2015, Cullen's project will develop quote unquote living electrodes composed of neurons transfected with optogenetic reagents. So I bet you they create these little neurons and take that little CRISPR DNA strand where they have optogenetics all built into the DNA and somehow splice and dice that in there. So Cullen's project will develop living electrodes composed of neurons transfected with optogenetic reagents that can record and stimulate neural circuits. The neurons will be grown in tiny glass tubes and then inserted into the rodent cortex. And if they make connections to the cortical neurons, they could be used for selective recording and modulation of the native cortical circuits, which would enable targeting of specific host neuronal subtypes using custom tissue engineering to increase specificity to target neuronal populations. Now that just sounds beyond crazy. But basically, they're looking at making biological electrodes utilizing some sort of probably small micro 3D printer with some stem cells that turn into brain neurons or something, and they splice and dice a little bit of that DNA from the optogenetics strands that they have to make the brain cells light sensitive. And that will easily allow them to manipulate, record, and modulate what's going on in the host brain. And so that is happening at the University of Pennsylvania. Let's see. Should we look at one more to make your morning dystopic? I just can't even get over how, I'll drop this in the chat too, because I can't get over how bizarrely, insanely mad science this is. All right, this one's for deep brain imaging out of the University of California, San Diego. Non-degenerate multi-photon microscopy for deep brain imaging. Infrared wavelengths, which have low attenuation in the brain tissue, enhance the imaging depth of multi-photon imaging, though current use requires powerful lasers that could damage tissue. I would hate that. The brain doesn't sound like a good idea. The scientists plan to use light of different wavelengths for multi-photon excitation at lower laser power, which will allow much deeper imaging than currently possible. This will be combined with an adaptive optic strategy for added gains in depth and focus, which could enable a 2 to 3-fold improvement in depths of imaging using 2-photon microscopy. So, wouldn't you hate to be little mousy they were using in that experiment? Taking lasers, taking off your skull cap, and then taking lasers and zapping them into your brain. This stuff just is really disturbing to me. And it just goes on and on and on. Like, you wouldn't even believe there's all these invasive devices, large scale recording and modulation. Actually, that's a good one to look at. Let's look at large scale recording and modulation, like real time recording and modulation of the population at large. Development. Wow, they're talking about like brainwide manipulation. This is beyond frightening. This is like every horrifying nightmare that I have ever had coming true, and it's all done in the name of curing people with all, we have such an epidemic now, these brain wasting diseases and Alzheimer's and dementia. And people coming back from the battlefield with brain injury. And, hey, don't worry about it because the Chinese are going to be augmenting their children. Little Johnny's going to have to keep up and get his little cortical chip inserted at birth. I told you guys I subscribed to some of those transhumanist news groups. And if you happen to be in one of those transhumanist news groups and listening to my show to give me a thumbs down and tell me what an idiot I am today, please hit the off button now. Yeah, over the weekend, I think they found me, a couple of them anyway. What an idiot this girl is! She just doesn't understand. Like, are you kidding me, dude? I just don't understand. You obviously have been listening more than 5 minutes. I understand more than you would ever know. But I saw a post from one of those groups yesterday. This chick, you want to talk about a lunatic? This chick posts this thing about parents who are questioning the medical community as to the safety of procedures or whatever. And I'll tell you, I'm one of those parents. I was one of those guinea pigs that grew up. My mother trusted the medical establishment for 30 years. They turned me into a pincushion, did all kinds of things that I would have never have done to my child. That now, at this point in my life, I'm just hoping every day that I don't find out I have some debilitating disease because of all the things they put in me or sprayed me with or zapped me with or made me drink the big cup of radioactive iodine. Here, chuck this down. You know, lots of crazy stuff that I didn't know any better back then, but I sure do now. But this chick in this news group was saying that any parent that denies medical procedures for their child, that child, when they grow up, has the right to sue the parents if they have any issues in the future over it. So let's say, I don't know, the kid didn't get some sort of vaccine and then maybe couldn't get into the college they wanted to later in life because they didn't get vaccinated potentially. I don't know where she was kind of going with that. She really didn't give a specific as to why the child would want to sue the parents for future loss of opportunity. But she took it a step further. She said in the future, with all of this augmentation, there's going to be a lot of idiot parents out there that will not augment their child. Just like there are parents out there who will not vaccinate their child. And if you don't get your child augmented at birth in the future, your child is going to forever be some homeless creature living underneath an overpass in a paper bag in a cardboard box because of the choices that you made for that child when they had no say in the matter. And that any parent who does that should not only be held responsible, but sent to prison. I was like, honey. And, you know, I almost couldn't control my itchy keyboard fingers. But I have to play stealth mode with these people. I can't go on the attack because the last thing I want is an entire clan of lunatics gone mad coming after before the first cup. I try and play stealthy. Anyway, all right. So that just scared the crap out of me. So they want to hold parents responsible. And I mean, talk about peer pressure. And, you know, we saw that there was a couple in Canada not too long ago that now are going to be undergoing trial. Their child got sick and it wasn't, I don't even know what the issue was, what the kid got, but they didn't get the kid some vaccines. They were naturalists, and the kid got sick. They talked to a naturopath doctor. They got the fever down and everything. In the end, the kid had a really bad reaction. The ambulance took hours to get there, and the kid ended up dying in the ambulance. And now Canada is going after them and trying to charge them in the death of their child and saying that it was because they did not get the child vaccinated. And, of course, you know that witch hunt. They've been trying to find some good hooks to put into that witch hunt, especially when you have not one but two CDC whistleblowers talking about the MMR vaccine. And Joe Friday pulled something up yesterday in regards to the DTaP vaccine. I saw there was a story as well on Activist Post that came out about that, showing that one of the actual side effects of the DTaP vaccine in the insert from the manufacturer on page 11 of 13 happens to be autism. Yes, yes, yes. But hey, shh, don't tell anybody. They put it in plain sight. But you're supposed to just believe that all of this is for your best interest. And that you will not be the one that ends up with any type of side effects. This is not mad science. This is, we know what's going on, but it isn't. This is all new, all of it. They don't know. When they learn when you have a reaction. They learn when your kid ends up with autism. Whoops, add that one to the bag. That's what they're doing. Don't be a guinea pig. All right, let's move forward. So we've worked on this brain project. We've looked at all these mad science things. DARPA is fully involved. Talked about the ElectRx program that's using little electrical shocks and modulation sounds to be able to manipulate that vagus nerve to control things. They've been looking at also how the gut flora interacts with that vagus nerve, the gut flora, and how it specifically can change chemical compositions in the brain, make you depressed, make you happy, make you sick. And we're going to look at some of that. I have a story and some manipulation of the gut flora, but I don't think we're going to get there today. That really is some of the new burgeoning fields for quote-unquote healthcare. while we were reading yesterday, we came across a reference to something that was very disturbing. And we did not dig into it, but I pulled it out so we could look at it today because I had not heard of this before reading some of these stories yesterday about all these horrifying brain experiments going on with taxpayer dollars. And this is out of the monthly publication called Science. This is a pretty reputable publication. It's a science. I've seen this in doctor's offices, especially when you go to the hospital. Science is in one of those magazines that sits in the waiting room. Neuroscientists team call for a national brain observatory. Now, why would we want a national brain observatory? Could it have something to do with what we were just reading about as far as funded research, where they are doing large scale recording and modulation of brain waves of large groups of people? Yes. Well, you know what? Just like if you were managing a very large network, whether it be your own or you were outsourcing or being brought in as an outsourcer to monitor lots of corporations' networks, you would need what is called a network operations center. The place I used to work did that. We offered that as a service. Put some probe software, or even a little notebook that's doing the probing, that's doing heartbeat links and whatever. Make sure things are up and down. Check all your patch levels. Make sure your outer security is all up to date so you don't get hacked. Network operations center. Well, as we're looking at this real-time monitoring and recording of brain waves and inserting little things and putting on skull caps or even baseball hats we saw the other day and be able to extract information from the brain, or maybe even have your little implant up into your carotid artery that slips right in, called the stentode from DARPA. And they're going to need a way to maintain and monitor all that information from one central location that happened to be some of the research they're working on right now. And you will need a dashboard and analytics, probably running algorithms on those analytics to give you actionable information. Oh, Johnny's going off the rails. He's starting to have an episode. Johnny is starting to learn deductive reasoning. Look, that area of his brain is lighting up and the right chemicals are flowing. We better shut Johnny down or hit the button and give him a drug to put him back to sleep. Just makes you wonder why the hell we would have a national brain observatory that they're building. Well, let's check it out. Roughly 3 years ago, six well-known neuroscientists drafted an ambitious proposal for a large U.S. neuroscience project to map activity in the living brain. In spite of initial skepticism, the project became reality in the form of President Obama's research through the Advanced Innovative Neurotechnologies Initiative, more affectionately known as BRAIN. Now, that same team, who jokingly referred to themselves as the Kavli 6 because of their affiliation with the California-based Kavli Foundation, and I don't know anything about them, so it might be a little research project out there for you. Kavli, K-A-V-L-I. This Kavli 6 have crafted another bold proposal aimed at accelerating brain's success. The creation of a National Brain Observatory, which is a network of neurotechnology centers tied to the Department of Energy's national labs. Now, we read yesterday that Obama is asking for a boost in brain funding because they are adding the Department of Energy. I also found a story yesterday back from 2013 where it appears that the Brookhaven National Laboratory is where this is all taking place. Title of a story that I have is Lights Chemistry Action, a new method for mapping brain activity coming out of the Brookhaven National Laboratory. They are run by the DOE, so I'm thinking that this maybe is where this dotted line to the Department of Energy being involved in all this funding and them being the center of this, like that they're connecting them all together to the DOE, is coming from. We also discovered back quite a number of months ago that the Department of Energy was the one that was releasing the synthetic biology report to Congress back in 2013. And I linked that in yesterday's show notes. I can link that again when I put the notes in for today. But the DOE is not about oil and nuclear. I mean, maybe it is on the front end, but it looks like they're involved in a lot of scary ass shit on the back end. Anyway, says this first round of federal brain funding, roughly $100 million, went largely to grants for individual labs or multi-lab collaborations. And don't forget, when we read way back when, there was a show back from probably 6 months ago. Who are we doing a huge amount of collaboration with on neurology? But Israel. Yes, Israel is a big extension and has some big labs over there as well. The first round of federal brain funding, roughly $100 million, went largely to grants for individual labs or multi-lab collaborations. Neuroscientist Rafael Yust, one of the Kavli 6, says such small potatoes, $100 million of small potatoes, was not what he and others originally envisioned. From the beginning, he notes, they were convinced that, in addition to individual grants, the technological challenges facing neuroscience today require a coordinated big science investment in technology, such as the national telescopes and particle accelerators that revolutionized astronomy and physics. The new proposal, which Yust believes will cost at least $50 million a year in addition to existing brain funds to do well, is an attempt to remedy what the group sees as an important omission by brain leadership. Something has been left out of the original vision, and that's why we're making all this noise, and that's called large amounts of money. So he thought they needed an additional $50 million a year on top of their funding. Well, ding, ding. March 24, 2016, Boost for Brain Initiative funds in President's budget request for what? Well, got a lot more than $50 million. He is looking close to a 45% increase on $300 million, more than four times the $100 million spent. They are looking for a massive increase in brain funding. So I guess they got their wish. The proposal for the National Brain Observatory is short on funding details. The center would not necessarily involve new built facilities. Though Yust says that is not out of the question, they could also arise from within the Department of Energy's labs around the country, such as the Argonne National Lab in Lamont, Illinois, or at other places such as the University Labs and Marine Biological Laboratory in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, he says. The ultimate composition of any national laboratory is likely to be influenced by meetings held prior to the annual Society for Neuroscience Conference. You know, what really disturbs me about this is a couple things I'm thinking about. Of course, we've spent a lot of time looking at AI and mimicking the human brain and trying to make these digital brains think and come to conclusions, learn, right? We've looked at a lot of that. All the big tech boys have massive AI projects going on, and they're doing this multi-layered learning. We also found out some robots are evolving. We found out that they're teaching AI to say no. They're giving it vision. I never got to the story. They're also giving it smell. The smell of vision. I smell. I don't remember what they were calling it. But There's a story in here somewhere about this new bomb-smelling drone that's got the nose, and it could smell it from, I don't remember how far. It was pretty far, 100 meters, 100 yards or something. We'll look at that. But they're giving all these senses now to these machines, and of course they mimic nature. So understanding the brain better, being able to build interfaces between computers and the brain, merging the line between synthetic and biological, is all a part of the plan for the future Internet of Things. We've talked about making us actual things on the Internet, right? And not just you know, however they're going to give us addresses. It's probably, you know, like an IP address on a on a data network would probably equate in the human world to some sort of biometric pattern that is yours and only yours, that would be your address. And then have some sort of national monitoring center. I mean, I can see how all these dots go together. In the future, it's not just going to be you on the Internet of Things. It's going to be every cell in your body on the Internet of Things. And we dug into some of that. We have some Regina Duggan stuff. I don't know. We got probably 25 minutes. Might be able to get there if I stop yapping so much. And we're going to cruise here right after I'm done with the story, because there's a bunch more stuff I want to add to this. But you can see where this is all headed. And I'm not saying tomorrow, because I don't think this is going to happen tomorrow, though things are happening exponentially fast. But I think before I kick the bucket, I might actually see some of this horror come to fruition. Anyway, let's finish up the story. There's two more paragraphs left. So this is about the National Brain Observatory they want to form as part of this brain project. The goal of the observatory proposal is to expand access to four kinds of expensive technologies necessary for mapping the brain structure and activity. One, large-scale electron microscopes in the realm of 90 to 200 beams, which are far too expensive for individual laboratories to acquire and maintain. Two, fabrication facilities for the new nano-sized electrode systems that can record activity of large numbers of neurons. Number three, new optical and magnetic resonance brain activity imaging technologies. And number four, advanced storage and computational data mining. Ding, 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 ding. So we are talking like backup storage, large observatories, repositories, operation centers. Now, if we go back to what Kurzweil had talked about, uploading and downloading yourself to the cloud, does this or does this not sound like they are laying the groundwork for all of that? Because it sure does to me. A national observatory system could also foster the public development and use of expensive technologies such as lasers, which are used for a variety of neuroscience methods but are currently supplied by private companies. Although the proposal is ambitious, the Cavill Group is not to be underestimated, says David Kleinfeld, a neurophysicist at the University of California, San Diego, who was involved in some of the early brainstorming for the observatories and will be attending the meeting that they're having on Friday. When he read their original brain activity mapping paper that launched the Brain Initiative, he says, I chuckled about halfway through. Then I poured myself a glass of wine and went back to writing a paper, he says. But I was wrong. The Brain Project went viral, he said. Whether the same will be true of the National Brain Observatory is up to the neuroscience community and, of course, to the president and Congress. Put on a seatbelt, because Big Brother just took a step forward. He turned into an adolescent. At least Big Brother doing brain monitoring. He turned into an adolescent who is now going to become dangerous if he isn't already. All right. Binghamton University. This is in New York. I think so. It doesn't say, but there's a SUNY University in Binghamton. not sure. I don't know. We'll see. This caught my attention, reading all this other stuff. Out of ScienceDaily.com, researchers can identify you by your brain waves with 100% accuracy. This is what I was referring to when I said about becoming one of the Internet of Things in the future and how they're going to number us. I really think it's going to be some sort of brain pattern that will be our permanent address, because they can identify you with 100% accuracy. So that's a pretty strong biometric. This was dated April 18, 2016, so 2 days ago, out of Binghamton University. Team of researchers has recorded the brain activity of 50 people wearing an electrocephalogram headset while they looked at a series of 500 images designed specifically to elicit unique responses from person to person, for instance, a slice of pizza, a boat, Anne Hathaway, the word conundrum as well. And they found that participants' brains reacted differently to each image, enough so that a computer system was able to identify each volunteer's brain print, ding, with 100% accuracy. Your responses to certain stimuli, whether it be foods, celebrities, or words, might seem trivial, but they say a lot about you. Now, again, behavioral analytics people. See, once they crack all these mysteries and how people react to things and what they mean and what characteristics certain people have, don't forget, too, in social media, they're going to be releasing all these chatbots now. Tay was one, and I know Tay was humorous. That was the Microsoft chatbot that turned into the Nazi lover on Twitter and the Nazi lover sex fiend on Twitter in less than 24 hours. You know, don't think that that's a mistake, though. What they're doing is, you know, they were doing all these studies on Facebook, let's say, without people knowing, to see how they could sway opinion. And they're taking reactions to things and they're mapping them to see what kind of person you are. There are all kinds of sociological and psychological experiments they're doing. But the next step forward with these chatbots, you'll be reading about the app now for mental illness and many apps for mental illness. And being able to diagnose you with illnesses based upon your reactions to things, you know, don't think that they're not going to take that a step further to be able to diagnose you with, you know, quote unquote mental deficiencies, to being able to diagnose you being, you know, a thorn in the side of the machine that you will need to be fixed. I saw they just came up with some genetic, they discovered where on the DNA strand depression comes from now, so I'm sure they're going to find a way to CRISPR that in a mouse and see what happens. I mean, this is just, they've gotten to the point where you and me and Nana and all of our future progeny have just become a huge science experiment. And I mean, we've always been, but it's kind of been on the outskirts. It's kind of been on the QT, right? We didn't know when they were doing stuff to us. But now it's like everything you interact with, anything online, just about, they're judging you. They're taking your statistics and they're putting them somewhere. And then they're going to be able to run these algorithms. I mean, this is what this is all leading toward. This will be pre-crime. They will be fixing you before you even know that you're broken and sending out the white coats. Didn't we see that in the smartphone apps yesterday? They said just by your not going onto social media all of a sudden, or watching the GPS on your phone and seeing that you haven't left the house in 2 days or made any phone calls, they could be able to detect that you're starting to have a depression episode potentially just by your non-action. When they look at your routines that you are no longer following and dispatch help to show up at your location to intervene. It's, I don't like any of this at all. Anyway, so they rated people on how their responses were, from pizza to a boat to Anne Hathaway to the word conundrum. I would say we are in quite a conundrum right now. So when you take hundreds of these images where every person is going to feel differently about each individual one, then you can be really accurate in identifying which person it was who looked at them just by their brain activity. In their original study titled Brain Print, published in 2015 in Neurocomputing, the research team was able to identify one person out of a group of 32 by that person's responses with only 97% accuracy, and that study only incorporated words, not images. It is a big deal going from 97 to 100% because we imagine the applications for this technology being for high security situations, like ensuring the person is going into the Pentagon or the nuclear launch bay is it the right person. You don't want to be 97% accurate for that. You want to be 100% accurate. Brain biometrics are appealing. Brain biometrics, ding. Because they are cancelable and cannot be stolen by malicious means the way a fingerprint or a retina scan can. And the results suggest that brainwaves could be used by security systems to verify a person's identity. Ding, 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 ding. This is how we're gonna get into your head, because it's gonna be for your safety. Can you even believe that? Like, when I saw that, I was like, come on. Is that how we're going to sell it? It's all for your own good. You got to put on this brainwave scanner now, or your Google contact lens, or your dopamine headphones that not only give you little zaps of dopamine, but we scan your brainwaves, or what? What about the ECG baseball hat we saw the other day? Look, it comes in all kinds of designer colors and shapes. So we can scan your brain waves, your brain print, to authenticate you to get onto the internet or to get into your self-driving car or to get your superpowers, like Regina Duggan says, to be able to access things that we give you access to, like your qubits in the new bank account. It's unreal. And people are going to go along with this. They already have that technology there to be able to scan, put on these little headsets and say, hey, now you can wirelessly type with your brain on the computer without ever having to move your arms. You could just think it. You can play video games too. It's cool. Put it on, put it on. Put on those VR goggles to boot. Get sucked right into the machine, and we'll always know it's you. We know that you're playing along. We know that you don't have deviant thoughts, so you will be getting more qubits than little Johnny there seems to have some problems, always thinking nasty things about the machine. Anyway, back to this. If somebody's fingerprint is stolen, that person just can't grow a new finger, of course, to replace the compromised fingerprint. So damn you. That fingerprint for that person is compromised forever. Fingerprints are non-cancelable. Yeah, and so are your DNA getting stolen. We looked at that, too. All these people giving up the DNA to the machine to who the hell knows who. 23andMe that's then using it for all kinds of research with the National Institute of Health. And then giving it to big pharma spinoffs to create drugs for personalized medicine. But once that DNA strand, once your DNA gets out there, there's no taking that back. And you don't own it anymore. And we found that people could do all kinds of shit with it. And hey, I guess if someone chops off your finger and gets your fingerprint, or puts a little, like I watched MacGyver do, put a little dust on the scanner and be able to lift that finger or that handprint off to break into a high security underground lab, like the show we watched last night. That's been our new thing. I turned my kid onto MacGyver, and that was one of my favorite shows as a kid. But, you know, MacGyver works for an institution that reminds me a lot of DARPA. And he's doing all kinds of stuff. Actually, yesterday they had in this lab. His job was to break into this high security lab as the last test before they let it go live. And MacGyver, if anyone could do it, MacGyver can. And when he got in, they had these little robot drones with 100,000 watt lasers on them that look like little Daleks from Doctor Who. And the artificial intelligent computer security system that went haywire. And I couldn't believe, I mean, that show's from like the 80s, if not even before. And even my daughter was pointing out, she's like, Mom, this is all the stuff you still talk about. I'm like, no kidding. I couldn't even believe it. I think MacGyver was prophetic. They were giving us some hints to the future. No, I don't know. But if you could watch the reruns, they're actually pretty damn good. Anyway, if someone's fingerprint is stolen, that person can't just grow a new finger to replace the compromised fingerprint. The fingerprint for that person is compromised forever. Fingerprints are non-cancelable. Brain prints, on the other hand, are potentially cancelable. So in the unlikely event that attackers were actually able to steal a brain print from an authorized user, the authorized user could then reset their brain print. Oh, don't tell me it entails electroshock therapy. Zan Peng Zhang, assistant professor at Binghamton University's Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering and Biomedical Engineering, doesn't see this as the kind of system that would be mass-produced for low-security applications, at least in the near future, but it could have important security applications. We tend to see the applications of the system as being more along the lines of a high-security physical location like the Pentagon or Air Force labs, where there aren't that many users that are authorized to enter, and those users don't need to constantly be authorizing the way that a consumer might need to authorize in their phone or their computer. The study called Cerebrae, C-E-R-E-B-R-E, a novel method for a very high accuracy event-related potential biometric identification, was published in the IEEE Transactions on Information Forensics and Security. So look out, people. Not in the near future, they might not be making us authenticate with our brain prints, but doesn't look like it'll be like that way forever. There was a story here about neuronal interfaces. I had mentioned this yesterday. We'd covered it back in January, but I think I wanted to at least read this story today. This was talking about the high bandwidth HD neuronal connections that they're working on. I mentioned it yesterday, like the current connections that they have are like 300 baud modems, and they're going to turn it into some sort of HD gig connection with some of these new technologies. Brain implant will connect a million neurons with super fast bandwidth. A neural interface being created by the U.S. military aims to greatly improve the resolution and connection speed between biological and non-biological matter. Oh, I wonder what they're going to use that for. And I wonder who's involved. Oh, wait. The Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, has announced a new research and development program known as Neural Engineering System Design, and also known as NESD. This aims to create a fully implantable neural interface able to provide unprecedented signal resolution and data transfer bandwidth between the human brain and the digital world. Ding, ding. The interface would serve as a translator, converting between electrochemical language used by neurons in the brain and the ones and zeros that constitute the language of information technology. Ding, ding, ding. I can't even get over this. It's not even funny anymore. I can't even laugh about it. The communications link would be achieved in a biocompatible device no longer than a cubic centimeter. And this could lead to a breakthrough treatment for a number of brain-related illnesses. Yes, all of us with spectrum mental health disorders, I would imagine. As well as providing new insights into possible future upgrades for aspiring transhumanists. Today's best brain computer interface system are like two supercomputers trying to talk to each other using a 300 baud modem, says Philip Elavalida, program manager. Imagine what will become possible when we upgrade our tools to really open the channel between the human brain and modern electronics. Among the potential applications are devices that could, of course, help restore sight or hearing by feeding digital auditory or visual information into the brain at a resolution and experiential quality far higher than is possible with current technology. Neural interfaces currently approved for human use squeeze a tremendous amount of information through just 100 channels, with each channel aggregating signals from tens of thousands of neurons at a time, and this results in noisy and imprecise signals. But in contrast, this new program aims to develop systems that can communicate clearly and individually with up to 1 million neurons in a given region of the brain. To achieve these ambitious goals and ensure the technology is practical outside of the research setting, DARPA will integrate and work in parallel with numerous areas of science and technology. And I think we kind of outlined some of those programs yesterday as being funded by the Brain Project. They will integrate and work in parallel with numerous areas of science and technology, including neuroscience, synthetic biology, low-powered electronics, photonics, medical device packaging and manufacturing, systems engineering, and clinical testing. In addition to the program's hardware challenges, researchers will be required to develop advanced mathematical and neural computational techniques to transcode high-definition sensory information between electronic and cortical neuronal representations, and then compress and represent that data with minimal loss. The program aims to recruit a diverse roster of leading industry stakeholders willing to offer state-of-the-art prototyping, manufacturing services, and intellectual property. Yes, let's suck you into the machine, smart people at universities. And if you come up with something good, we will allow you to spin off into a nice little tasty startup with lots of venture capitalist funding to be able to start rolling out these next phase technologies. In later phases of the program, these partners, and they're calling it the partnership, we looked yesterday, there were a whole group of private partners working on the Brain Project, but I noticed very interestingly enough that they only gave a few names, and most of them were confidential. But these partners could help transition the resulting technologies into commercial applications. DARPA will invest up to $60 million into this NESD program between now and 2020. All right, we got a few minutes left, and I think we're going to try and end up here. If I can play a video, I don't know, we'll give it a shot. We'll see if it works. Let's see. I have to connect over here. I have a video queued up here that deals with the paralyzed man using his brain waves to play video games. We talked about that yesterday and the day before, how amazing that is. And it's going to encourage people to hop on board and to get with the program. Now, don't tell me this isn't going to load. It always happens. Paralyzed man uses brainwaves to play video games. A chip implanted into Ian Burkhart's brain allows him not only to move his hands using his own thoughts, but play video games. And it just doesn't do anything. Hold on, we'll try and reload this. And we're going to run out of time. But do-do-do-do-do, it's amazing how I have everything set to go when it comes time. And it doesn't do anything. Do-do, do-do-do-do-do. Here it comes. Come on.
It's not unusual for a college-age student to spend...
All right, hold the phone. We got volume is too low. It's always something.
Oh, ding.
There we go.
It's not unusual for a college-age student to spend hours playing a guitar video game, but the fact that Ian Burkhardt is doing it is nothing short of incredible. Paralyzed from the neck down in a diving accident in 2010, Ian couldn't move a finger.
Now it's just something that's so fluid, it's just kind of like it was before I had my injury, where I just think about what I want to do, and now I can do it.
Ian made international headlines in 2014, becoming the first paralyzed patient to move his hand using his own thoughts.
Oh my God. I have a picture.
Well, I have a picture of this brain implant on my Facebook page. It looks like a big printer connection stuck right in the back of his skull.
That day, he simply picked up a spoon. Today, he's not only playing video games, but pouring objects from a cup and swiping credit cards, all with the aid of this sleeve, a computer chip, and a movement algorithm developed by Battelle that Ian controls with his brain.
Several years after the spinal cord injury, his level of functioning has improved significantly, so he's able to have more use of his fingers and hands to do functional tasks, which has not been demonstrated before.
In 2014, neurosurgeon Ali Rezai implanted a computer chip in Ian's brain at the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center. That chip is connected to wires that come from Ian's head and are hooked to this sleeve to create a neural bypass. For more than a year, Ian has made dozens of trips back to Ohio State for therapy with a team of physicians and Battelle engineers. Each time, computers read his thoughts, decode them, and send messages to the sleeve to move his muscles. The results of Ian's remarkable progress are detailed in a new study in the journal Nature. And though it may sound like science fiction, the more Ian and the computer work together, the more they learn to listen to each other, taking even researchers by surprise.
This is possible. You can take someone, a human being who is paralyzed, and give them the ability to use that paralyzed limb again in a functional way.
Researchers hope this technology can be used to help a range of patients in the future, including stroke victims.
All right, guys. Well, if you can even believe it, that's about it for today. Make sure you stick around as Lonnie Clark is live up next. We'll catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.